Welcome to Pushing the Limits with your host, Lisa Tarmaty, where it's all about health optimization, anti-aging, longevity, and being the very best you can be. Brought to you by lisatarmaty.com.
Well, hi everyone and welcome into the show. This week I have Dr. Scott Scher. Now, Dr. Scott is a world-renowned hyperbaric oxygen therapy practitioner and doctor. He's also an internist. He is the founder of Troscriptions.com and also the Home and Hope organization, a nonprofit that educates doctors and clinicians in health optimization medicine. So we're going to be diving today into hyperbaric oxygen, one of my favorite subjects. I'm sitting here in my hyperbaric oxygen and red light therapy clinic at the moment. And also we're going to be talking about something called methylene blue, which I'm super excited to bring to you this information. Very, very important molecule to put on your radar. I hope you enjoy this interview with Dr. Scott. He's just the most incredible person and just full of knowledge and sharing some of that special wisdom with you. And I'm hoping to do some courses with Dr. Scott, both for the hyperbaric and with his health optimization medicine doctor training. So stay tuned for more from him and the learnings that I'll get from him. Now, before we head over to the show, if you could please share this podcast with your friends and your family and people that you think might benefit from this information, I really, really appreciate it. It takes a hell of a lot of effort to put all this together and to research for days and weeks sometimes for some of the interviews that we do. And there's a team in behind the scenes who do all of the auditing, the audio engineers, the social media people, the show notes. It's a pretty labor intensive, costly undertaking, and we really appreciate your support. You can donate to the show. We have a patron community. We're going to be actually swapping out our software program that runs this shortly, but at the moment, if you go to patron.lisatarmaty.com and for the price of a coffee or two a month, you decide, you can support us producing this show and keeping this free to air for everybody so that this education gets out into the world. We also have a YouTube channel that I really love you to go and subscribe to if you're listening to this on the podcast. It's sometimes really nice to have a video and actually see the people that you're talking and listening to. So head over to YouTube and just look up Lisa Tarmaty. You'll find my channel there and listen to us and subscribe to us and share and like and comment and do all of that good sort of stuff. And reach out to us, support@lisatarmaty.com, if you've got any questions about anything that was in the interviews or you've got some questions around your health that you want help with the consulting side of my business and what I do, or our hyperbaric oxygen therapy and our red light therapy clinic. Or if you're looking for longevity and anti-aging, then check out our curated range of longevity supplements that I've spent over 6 years developing now, curating a range of the most amazing supplements out in the world and bringing them to New Zealand for New Zealanders and Kiwis and Aussies down this end of the earth. So make sure that you check that out at lisatarmaty.com. And watch out for our new company, Avum Labs. That's AEVUM, Avum Labs. And we are still in the development phase at the moment. We are a biotech company. We're going to be doing longevity supplements. And we are getting ready to launch in a couple of months' time. We've still got a wee ways to go, working on the website and formulations have been finalized. And we're really excited to bring you some sort of cutting edge stuff. So I won't say too much more at this point, but stay tuned for more from Avum Labs. Right, over to the show now with Dr. Scott Scher. Well, hey everyone, and welcome into Pushing the Limits. Today I'm super excited to have one of my idols, actually, that I absolutely love his work. You're amazing. I have Dr. Scott Scher, who is a repeat offender on the show. Welcome back, Dr. Scott. Wonderful to have you.
It's good to see you, Lisa. Yeah, I think one of the times that I've been on the show, I actually took the call or took the podcast from my hyperbaric chamber.
That's right. You did too. Yeah. Inside your home one, I think it was.
Yeah, that was during COVID. That was interesting. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, COVID was interesting, that's for sure.
Indeed. lots of things to say there. Or not.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yes, we've exchanged war stories there a little bit. But you are Mr. Hyperbaric. You're also...
Doctor.
Sorry, yes, I should say, but world-renowned hyperbaric expert. You also have a company called Troscriptions, Which I want to dive into a little bit later, and something specifically I want to talk about methylene blue, because that's become really important to me lately. And also you work with Dr. Ted Archicoso with the Home Hope organization, your nonprofit. Educating, which I hope to be a student of yours soon. So you're you know, spread even further than I am by the looks of it, and you've got four kids. How do you do it?
I just get up every day and do my best, really. I wish I had a magic, what's that movie? It was actually an old movie with Michael Keaton where he clones himself five times. It was called Multiplicity. Yeah. Fantastic movie. Funny. Yeah. But I've always thought, if I just had like more of me, you know, that could do more stuff. Or at least be more efficient at everything that I do, but whatever. No, I mean, like every day is interesting. I think that that having the integration of the family and the work and all the businesses and the clinic work that I do, like it's actually really a lot of fun most of the time. I don't mind the people, like there's a lot of people out there that love their work. They also love stopping their work and they love, you know, doing other things. I mean, there's unfortunately a lot of people who don't like their work and just want to stop it as soon as possible. I'm fortunate enough that, I mean, the day-to-day can be hard sometimes, but the missions are really important to me. And so I feel very driven in that case. And people call it like a work-life balance, but for me, it's more like a work-life integration, right? Because my life is my work is my life, but I don't see that as a bad thing per se in my end, but I'm very American, you know, is what it comes down to, right? And maybe yourself included here, but Americans, like, we're known for wanting to work. Like we want to do stuff. And I guess I fall into that category. I'm not the son of immigrants directly, but I have Jewish heritage and there's lots of hard work in that world of mine growing up. And that was always kind of part of the deal. So
yeah,
I'm happier when I'm doing things.
Your dad was a wonderful chiropractor. Is he still practicing?
He is. He still is. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
He's been practicing for now 44, 45 years in New York and still going strong, stronger than I could ever. Most people actually.
Yeah. Incredible. And you've come from an internal medicine. So you've gone through the standard sort of like medicine, traditional medicine, and then also stepped out into these other worlds of hyperbaric and health optimization and metabolomics and proteomics and all of that sort of exciting stuff. Yeah. But let's
it all
start
goes together
to,
though. Yeah.
Yeah.
It all goes together for me. But go ahead. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the thing. Like they do, and then they are very much, and I wanted to talk about both because I want to start with hyperbaric because, you know, I'm sitting in my own hyperbaric clinic here and any guidance I can get from you is and teach other people about is key. But, and I've heard you say a number of times, it's also what you put around the hyperbaric, the foundations, the groundwork that goes into it. And I think that's a part of the conversation we probably didn't have last time. Tell us, what is hyperbaric for starters? Just give us a brief definition and what, let's go through a list of the things that it can be used for, both for what's covered by insurance and what's not covered by insurance. Well, here nothing's covered, but basically, well, a couple of things in the hospital, but not much. But yeah, just go from there.
Yeah, I mean, the basic definition of hyperbaric therapy is a combination of increased inspired oxygen and increased atmospheric pressure. We know most of us a little bit about oxygen because without oxygen, we don't survive for very long. We need oxygen to make energy. We can increase the inspired amount of oxygen in circulation significantly using a hyperbaric chamber. Most of our oxygen is carried on red blood cells. Red blood cells are kind of our rate limiting step, though, for oxygen carrying capacity. So if you want to get more work done in your muscles, you need more oxygen to flow to those muscles to get more energy or to continue energy flowing. And so typically we only have a couple different ways to increase our oxygen carrying capacity. The main one is to come to Colorado with me and come altitude training, because when you live in Colorado, or actually, well, when you come to Colorado, you get this hormone secreted from your kidneys called epigen, increase the number of red blood cells in circulation. You can also give yourself a transfusion. You can give the drug directly to yourself, as cyclists have been famous to do, like Lance Armstrong and others. But there's another way to increase the amount of oxygen in circulation, not just your red blood cells, but also dissolving in the plasma or the liquid of your bloodstream. And the liquid of your bloodstream has very little oxygen in it at sea level, but you can drive up to like 1,200% more oxygen in circulation that way, which is really important. And you do that by increasing the amount of atmospheric pressure. And pressure is what we simulate in a hyperbaric environment, the pressure you would feel under a certain amount of seawater. And water is very heavy. We can simulate the pressure under any amount of water you can imagine, really, almost, but actually not almost, but pretty deep. And in that hyperbaric pressure, that pressure itself is what changes your physiology and drives that oxygen into circulation to very, very high levels in that plasma or the liquid of your bloodstream. So in brief, hyperbaric therapy is a combination of increased atmospheric pressure with increasing amounts of oxygen, and you drive more oxygen in circulation. And as a result of that, you have basically three things that are going to happen. One is that you have an increased amount of oxygen in circulation. Two is that you have what are called the downstream effects of having more oxygen in circulation, which is increasing oxidative stress or the amount of free radicals in the body, which is not always a bad thing in this case. Mm-hmm. And the third is pressure-related mechanisms related to the pressure itself, pressurizing your blood vessels, pressurizing your lymphatics, increasing flow, increasing lymphatic flow as well, blood flow and lymphatic flow. And then the downstream effect of that is decreasing inflammation, decreasing swelling, new and reversing low oxygen states, creating new blood vessels, stem cell release, anti-infection capacity, immune system regulation and upregulation and modulation. And I think that's it. Yeah. I mean, overall. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a kind of an overall foundational way of supporting healing, recovery, and optimization.
Yeah. And so this is like, so it's helpful for so many things. And there are certain things that are covered, or in America, they're covered. I think there's 14 or things that are 14. Covered for, with hyperbaric, and you can actually get them funded, you know, things like, radiation, problems after cancer treatments or what are some of the burns and crush injuries and diabetic wounds and things like that. All those things. But it's actually, and sorry guys, the sun's shining in my eyes now, and I should have put the curtains down, but it is what it is. There's so many other things that it can be helpful for, you know, like I've used it for a lot for stroke, for TBI, for Alzheimer's, for infections. There's a huge, great list. Chronic issues, autoimmune issues can be supportive. Lyme disease, I haven't used it for that, but I know that it's useful to traumatic brain injuries. And it causes, it reverses low oxygen states, which a lot of us have low oxygen states when we're older, when we've got inflamed tissue, when we've got a ripped ligament or a crushed leg or something like that, or if you've had a stroke and had an ischemic injury. But it's also creating epigenetic changes where it's influencing the, you know, over 1,000 genes, I think, in what it's turning on.
8,000.
So tell us a little bit about the epigenetic changes and why. So it's not just the acute situation, you know, where you're getting more oxygen.
Yeah, I usually throw it into two buckets. You have either the acute effects of hyperbaric therapy, which is the immediate effects of going into a chamber and getting all that oxygen in circulation. Then you have the long-term effects of hyperbaric therapy, which is over a protocol, typically not just one hyperbaric session. Mm. But what's happening is that you're creating a shift in the expression of your DNA using the science of epigenetics, really, here. So the reactive oxygen species that are created because of that, all that oxygen that are coming in circulation, they create a stress on the DNA to modulate various types of genes that are responsible for growth, inflammation, programmed cell death for the most part. And so many of us think of reactive oxygen species as bad, but we need those to help optimize the system. It's very similar to something like exercise, where you have exercise, you work hard, you break down your muscles a little bit, and they get rebuilt stronger as a result of that stress. So hyperbaric therapy can do the same thing, but you have to be careful. If you have somebody that's chronically stressed, chronically inflamed, has autoimmune conditions, is antioxidant deficient, and you have a lot of oxidative stress coming in because of a hyperbaric environment, you can get into trouble because they don't have the ability to neutralize or balance out that oxidative load that's happened because of the chamber. So you have to be careful in those kinds of patients. And so what I often say is that it's not if hyperbaric therapy will be helpful, it's when. And if you're really sick and inflamed and chronic complex medical illness kinds of things, it may be more beneficial for you to wait and do some of the other work to help optimize your system so that you're more able to benefit from hyperbaric therapy over the long term. And I got burned in the beginning of my career in the 2012, 2013 timeframe over a decade ago, because I was not really understanding that if you didn't wait for some people, they wouldn't get better at all, or they get a little bit better and then their symptoms would just come back after they finished hyperbaric therapy. And so it's important to make that delineation between acute and chronic. And if it's a chronic issue or a chronic goal, then is it the right time to go in hyperbaric chambers, or should be thinking of other integrations, foundational kinds of health metrics? And this is where I got involved in the nonprofit, for example, because I was always in the, I started referring people to doctors that could do this work first, right? When I first started to realize, maybe about 7 or 8 years ago now, that I really needed to be doing more for the patients that were getting hyperbaric therapy rather than just putting them in the chamber. Side note, I got disinvited from a conference because I was going to talk about not putting people in hyperbaric chambers.
Side
note. So, but anyway, I started referring people to my friends and practitioners that could do this work. I'm like, well, I need to be able to start doing this work myself is what it came down to. So that's when I started doing more of this foundational work myself.
Yeah. And then you've now worked with Dr. Ted, and you now teach on this course, which I'm hoping to do one of them. And it's really at the cutting edge. I mean, this is the next level of medicine and the future, basically. And it's a struggle. You know, like even for me in my situation, you know, I do a lot of health consulting and I try to work on people's foundations. I'm always looking holistically at the person, whatever testing is required, microbiomes and nutrostats and whatever I'm doing, you know, looking at organic acids, looking at things like that. But I can't work with as many people as I want to put through the chamber, you know, so there's people that you have to sort of prioritize for that sort of care, right? And there's not many people that are doing that type of approach here. But it is even like putting into the person maybe the right nutrients, the right diet, giving them some basic foundational information about how they can help themselves and what they can do around their hyperbaric sessions, even if you can't, you know, work full on one-on-one with somebody, could be beneficial, you know?
Yeah, I can comment on that. I mean, I think that was the whole framework that I started to develop about 7 or 8 years ago, where I realized that you could do a lot more for patients. Number one, if you held off on hyperbaric therapy in some cases. And number two, if you created more of a framework, and this is something that I've developed over a long time now, where you're thinking about what you can do for patients before, during and after hyperbaric therapy. Yeah. This is the classifications of before, during and after a little bit more nuanced than that. But in general, that's what I'm looking at. Like, how can you optimize somebody before they go into the chamber, like way before, and then what you can do right before they go into the chamber to help them with their hyperbaric experience. Like, what can you do inside the chamber even while you're in there? Like if you had a stroke, if you have cognitive issues, if you've had physical issues, you can actually work on certain things when you're in the chamber to help rehabilitate those kinds of things. And then what can you do after the chamber to leverage what you just got, which is a huge amount more oxygen, or how do you detox after getting all that oxygen in the system? So that's the framework that I was using. And then I was like, well, you have laboratory analysis, and that's where Home Hope came in, and learning that a foundational approach where I can look at energy metabolism, vitamins, minerals, nutrients, and cofactors. And because if you don't have enough capacity to make energy and you put somebody into a hyperbaric chamber, you're going to get in trouble because all you're going to be creating in that person is a huge amount of stress without a huge amount of energy enhancement benefit. And this is some of the ways I first got burned doing hyperbaric therapy back in the day. And so the foundational approach using laboratory testing was really important. So laboratory testing, supplementation, personal practices, like what are you doing with your life? What is your diet overall? What other technology can you use to help you? What other practitioners can you use to leverage yourself? And how are you doing surveillance of all this as you're going through your hyperbaric protocol and seeing various metrics along the way to know that you're on the right track and you don't have to work on all those other things, including your hyperbaric protocol and modulate it anyway to be able to do this. So it's not that complicated. It sounds more complicated than it is, really, but it's basically like we've talked about this. And I know you'd probably talk about this. You can't out-supplement a shitty diet. You can't out-fill in the blank, right? And this includes hyperbaric therapy. You can't go into, I just had a conversation earlier with somebody today. Like, I want to go into the hyperbaric chamber for inflammation. I'm like, okay, so let's talk about what is causing inflammation and how do you address that so that you can have a beneficial effect, not only in the short term in the chamber, but long term as well. And people like, this was a funny conversation because I kept talking about her diet. I kept talking about her exercise. I kept talking about her hydration, her medication. She's like, are we going to talk about hyperbaric therapy? I'm like, we're going to get there. I promise.
Yeah.
Give me about.
Sometimes, hey, because I've heard hyperbaric hits inflammation. I want to get in the hyperbaric. Yeah. Yeah. And then that's sort of it is the easiest thing. And then you've got other situations, you know, I've got someone like mum, which can't exercise right now. Right. And we're trying to heal a bone. We're trying to heal muscle. We're trying to get rid of infections that she got in the aftermath of breaking her hip and so on and so forth. And so I didn't do it initially in the first couple of weeks where, you know, well, she was in hospital anyway. So that was that done. And then I've got a really good regime of, supplements going in and peptides and, you know, the right diet and all of those things are in order. And then at the point where I thought she was ready now to be able to take the hyperbaric, then we're putting her in and now we're doing a full, you know, protocol again and
amazing,
red light therapy. Yeah. But it's looking at her blood work. It's looking at some of her, you know, some of her testing, functional medicine testing, and just seeing, is she ready for that stressor? Because it's like, if you go and run a marathon and you haven't trained for a marathon, you're going to be in a world of trouble and you're going to damage yourself. Like my husband's just left today to run a marathon tomorrow and he's been training. Yeah. And I was like, oh, bye darling. Good luck. I can't go with you. But he's trained for the last, you know, 4 or 5 months, specifically for that. And I know his body will cope with that. If you go out tomorrow and you haven't trained and you go and do a marathon, you are going to be injured, you're going to be inflamed, you're going to be knocking your immune system right down, because you haven't built up that capacity, that hermetic stresses slowly built up over time. So all these hermetic stresses need to be taken into account that we can actually respond, unless we're talking like, you know, an acute a stroke situation, or, you know, like obviously if you're an acute stroke, go to your hospital, like don't go to the hyperbaric clinic, right? But after the initial care, that's when you probably do want to get in and save that tissue, you know, if you can early
right,
on.
Exactly.
But still doing all of this as well, you know, when you're working with stroke people.
I mean, that's where it comes out to like the acute versus chronic kind of thing,
yes.
Right? So I've called it my proverbial like throwing shit at the wall strategy. If somebody has like an acute issue, like I have the same buckets that I take stuff out of. I just kind of throw it all at you because it's an acute issue. But if it's and you kind of do what you think is going to be physiologically plausible and helpful. But if you have more time, then you really want to be able to be more intentional about what you're doing and go through the process of slowly, typically, working on things, right? And so working on somebody's gut for a little while before, or working on their hormones, or making sure they can make energy. Mm. It's going to make a huge difference, not only regarding their hyperbaric protocol, but like their life, right? And then that's kind of my smokescreen anyway, right? Is that like, yeah, I'm going to put you in the hyperbaric chamber. We're going to talk about the protocol. But by the way, 90% of what I talk about has nothing to do with hyperbaric therapy and will have a huge impact on everything else that you do, whether you go into the chamber or not. And then when I made that switch, you know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago now, that was really what I was doing. I was like, well, my focus can't just be hyperbaric therapy. I have to really focus on the work that I'm doing outside of that, like the foundational work, the nonprofit, and then, you know, the for-profit company that we developed, the transcriptions company, because then you can find ways to help people right now very easily, you know, while they're on that longer path to, you know, to optimizing their health, which can take a while. And certainly hyperbaric therapy may be a part of that, but it may not be the part of that right now, or the part that they need right now, considering everything else that's going on.
Just interrupting the show to let you know about our patron community here on the podcast at Pushing the Limits. We've been going for 8 years and we really need your support to keep the show on air and free to everybody so that everyone gets this fantastic information from all these great doctors, scientists, athletes, business people from all around the world. So we would love you to come and join us. You get a lot of exclusive member benefits when you do, but really it's about supporting the show and keeping it on air. And for a coffee or two a month, that would be fantastic if you can come and join us. You can go to patron.lisatarmaty.com. That's patron.lisatarmaty.com and check it all out.
Yep. So it's that if it's when, not if. So everybody could benefit from hyperbaric at some point, but not necessarily straight out of the gate. And putting in these whole parameters, and this is this holistic approach to health and this integrated, looking for root causes, looking for blockages in the energy production, you know, all of these sorts of things that can be really beneficial. So just to, you know, before we jump off hyperbaric, like there's also different so there's different protocols that we'll do, and there's different things that we'll put in for a certain period of time, like so many sessions. And a lot of the work is coming out of Israel, really, isn't it? Like Dr. Shia Frati's work and studies.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And when it comes to the Israelis, they're very much, well, only hard shell, only medical grade chambers. What's your take on the soft shell chambers and mild, you know, and, you know, people having mild hyperbaric chambers? I'm a big fan, to be fair. I know that some doctors, you know, the purists, if you like, in the hyperbaric world are very much medical grade, only hard shell chambers, only this, that. Sure. What's your take on that whole side of it?
I mean, when I started, I felt the same way, where like, I was like, well, the soft chambers don't do anything, because that was what I was told really by people that have been involved in the hard chamber hyperbaric world for a while. But I certainly find now that they have a significant impact, especially in people with neurocognitive kinds of things. Mm. For your general wellness kinds of reasons, so for your jet lags and your exercise recovery, I see significant benefits. And there's a recent study that was done. It just compared, you know, being at sea level versus being at 1.25 atmospheres, which is what you could find in a soft shell unit. And there was like 3 or 4 times the amount of stem cells released just after one treatment. And that's without any extra oxygen either. So, and this effect is not just oxygen, it's also pressure. And I think that the challenge, the argument you get from conventional docs or docs that don't believe in soft chambers is that you can get the same amount of oxygen in circulation at 1.3 with 100% face mask, for example, mm-hmm. a very similar amount. And that's true. If you do the calculations, that is true. But what they forget is that pressure has its own effect on physiology. It's got its own effect on energy production, its own effect on the vascular system that you're not measuring just with oxygen itself. And so I think that's where we're seeing a lot of the benefits there is actually on the pressure side of things.
Oh.
Of course, oxygen is important, but the pressure itself is also causing like a shearing kind of stress Mm-mm-mm. on cells and causing more stem cells to be released. And so I think that the soft shells or pressures between 1.3 and 1.5 can be very beneficial for people, but, and this is a big, but not everything can be treated at those levels.
Yeah.
The soft chamber companies out there that tell you that all you need to do is do more hyperbaric therapy at a milder pressure to equal what it would be at a deeper pressure are completely talking out of their rear ends, because there's no way the oxygen tension will ever be comparable at 1.3 to 1.5 versus 2.0. It's like a huge amount difference. And so no amount of hyperbaric therapy at 1.3 or 1.5 is going to equal 2.0 as far as I'm concerned. So
even in the neurological, you know, where the research has been for neurologic, you know,
no. So I guess what I mean is that what a lot of these companies will say is that, oh, you have an indication.
Oh, it's just a time thing. Yeah.
You have an indication that really requires 2.0, but all you need to do is use our chamber more frequently and you'll get the same benefits. And the answer is no, that's not what happens. But, or in addition, or to say what you're driving at here is that absolutely for neurologic conditions, we can see huge benefit at 1.3, 1.5 and 1.7, 1.8. So I like the opportunity. I like the option, if I have the opportunity, to have people be able to have a variation in pressure, because some people will respond at 1.5. Some people respond at 1.8. You know, some people respond at 1.3. You don't know until you start working with people. But I find that the main question I always have to counter, or the main comment, is that you just do more in a mild unit and it's going to equal the same as being in a deep unit. That's not the case.
Yeah. And is there more risk when you go to say 2.0 than when you're at say 1.5, which is what we've got here is 1.5. Is there more, you know, risk at the 2.0s, you know, like I know for things like cancer or burns and that type of thing, the 2.0, the studies are, you know, much better. Look, you're going to get more of an effect for infections and things as well. for neurological, some of the studies are saying actually ideal 1.5, but is there more risk factor involved at the 2.0 or above?
Yeah, there is. I mean, there's more pressure, there's more oxygen, there's going to be more reactive oxygen species. And so it's going to be more oxygen tension in the brain. So you have, do you have a higher risk of complications? There's no doubt about it. It's still very safe overall, but it does need more closer monitoring and a little bit better screening when thinking about who's going to be going in a hyperbaric environment, for, you know, for example. So you have to have normal lungs. You can have mildly lungs that are not normal and still go into 1.3, 1.5. I work with a lot of long COVID patients initially after the pandemic. We had a lot of pulmonary issues related to scarring or low oxygen sats, and they did great at 1.3 or 1.5, like fantastic.
Right.
But I would not put them at 2.0 because it'd be too much stress on their lungs themselves, for example. So there's some conditions that can do very well in a mild unit, even some cardiac conditions that you would never want to put in at 2.0 because it put too much stress on the heart, stress on the lungs, stress on the brain. So it takes more screening, but in general, still very, very safe.
Yeah. And the 2.0, you know, like for things like adjunct therapy, not making any claims here, but adjunct therapy for cancer, probably more beneficial than being at the 1.5, given that they haven't got lung problems or any of the other complicating factors.
In most of our cancer synergy protocols, where hyperbaric therapy is being used in conjunction with other types of care, not as a primary treatment, and is at the deeper pressures in general. Now, sometimes for radiation injury of the brain, we'll do milder pressures, but even that's usually somewhere like around 1.7, 1.8, if I can get them there. Mm-hmm. But in general, yeah, I mean, either for chemosensitivity, radiation sensitivity, or in combination with surgical procedures, you're using the deeper pressures to help with healing or for improvement of outcomes. The only one that I would probably say, that only indication that we sometimes use milder pressures in the realm of cancer would be in people with anemia. So a chronic anemia related to being on chemo or radiation or the cancer itself, they can feel very, very good just at 1.3 or 1.5. I mean, you don't want to go too deep in them typically because they're already very stressed and their bodies are pretty depleted. And then also, I guess the other category would be people that have brain-related symptoms from chemotherapy. I think, you know, chemo brain is what it's called. That can cause a lot of stress, and milder pressures can be very helpful there too.
Well, yeah. So there's a lot of nuance to this conversation and a lot of things. And there's a lot of studies going ongoing. And then in the health optimization and performance optimization, you're probably, you know, like the 1.3, 1.5 atmospheres for your weekend warrior person who wants to just optimize their health, or longevity protocols, doing, you know, round, like I like to do like blocks of treatment for people, like if they're just coming for athletic performance or something like that, you know, like a block of treatments and then typically having a break, and then maybe a maintenance program, you know, throughout the year where you come in and have another block of 20 and another block of 20, if they can do that, is, you know, a good thing to be doing long term. What's your take on the whole optimization side of things, you know, for athletes?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's huge, right? I think that most people don't realize that how depleted that they get over time, especially if you're an elite athlete, you're probably overtraining and under recovering. And then this is the reason why you get more injuries. This is the reasons why you get, you have a harder time over, like people that are at elite level often don't stay there for very long because their bodies start breaking down in various ways.
I know that.
I know you do. Yeah. And so, and I remember looking at some of these in early tests of some of the athletes that I was working on when I first started doing this kind of work. And I would be like shocked that they were able to be working at such a maximum capacity looking at their labs. And it was pretty obvious to me that this was not going to last much longer. Right.
Yeah.
And
so
if you can work on that, you can truly help like longevity in the space that they're working on. And then you can see that benefit across the board. They'll recover better. They'll have less injury. They'll be happier people overall, and not as stressed, you know, and that's obviously a big deal too, is that if you're constantly in fight or flight, you can never heal. Yeah. So a lot of my conversations with athletes are usually around, you know, majority of my conversations are around recovery overall because of that.
Yeah. I mean, as a, you know, ultra endurance athlete who was always like way beyond the edge most of the time. And it got to a point when I was about 44, 45, and I'd been doing it for 20 years. So, you know, or 25 really, sort of, you know, massive amounts of exercise at least, where I just couldn't, nothing there. Like it, I just didn't recover anymore. And there was a couple of expeditions where I just broke and that I carried on because I was like mentally like head through the wall, but the resilience wasn't there, and I've never really recovered that completely, you know. Still working on it. I'm healthier now than I was, say, 10 years ago. Way healthier, leaner, fitter, more muscular, you know, because I've tweaked and biohacked my way to optimization. But oxygen carrying capacity and things like that, VO2 max, never quite got there again. It's a tough one. You see these athletes just blow themselves to pieces, and it's a bit of a shame because you could at least prolong your career, if not, you know.
Yeah. Optimize. Yeah, and it's not easy because I get there's like this sort of risk reward or like short term, long term kind of thing, right? Like you know that you have this one shot, and you're just gonna go, you're gonna go for it, but then you have all these downstream negative effects over time. I was talking to somebody probably a week or two ago now. They were doing great. They were powerlifting like crazy. And like, they were doing all these competitions and then they weren't recovering. Then after one powerlifting competition, they were done. They couldn't, their brain stopped working. They had no more energy, and it's taken him 3 or 4 years to recover some of that. Right. And now he's like, well, hyperbaric therapy, can it help me? I'm like, maybe. Right. But we have to, he's done a lot of work already, but like, it's very common for people to kind of hit that and then never recover afterwards, unfortunately.
Yep. That was me, that's for sure. I wanted to jump now over, you know, like that, I could talk to you for hours on hyperbaric because the nuance is just so, you know, there's just so much to learn from you basically. Yeah. But I really wanted to touch on what you're doing at Troscriptions, and in particular methylene blue. This is a compound that I've come across, you know, through your work. I was actually made aware of it, you know, years ago listening to you. And never really followed that path because I didn't really have a huge need for it at the time. And then when my mum kept getting recurrent UTIs and we started running into, I didn't want to put antibiotics in, and I'm running into antibiotic resistance problems and stuff. One of my doctors actually who's in Colorado, Dr. Youth, said, get methylene blue. And I'm like, oh okay. What, for UTI? Okay. So then I started listening to you right on methylene blue, and I'm like, holy crap, why is methylene blue not like, not just for UTIs now, but why is not everybody on it and, you know, doing it? And then I realized, like, in New Zealand, we struggle to get methylene blue. And I've been trying to get your Troscriptions over here, and you guys don't send them down here. We'll have to have a talk.
It's hard to get them into New Zealand. This is true. Yes.
Yeah. So for those listening in New Zealand, some pressure on the systems and get this changed, because methylene blue, can you give us a definition of what it is and what it does in the body, and why am I so freaking excited about this compound? Because
before I do, how did your mom do with it? Did she do well with taking it? Or
yeah so we've literally started yesterday, so okay. She's got blue pea this morning.
She does, yeah.
was blue, and she was sparked up yesterday afternoon.
That's great.
I'm using it for the Alzheimer's stuff because I've been studying Dr. Gonzalez Lima's work and the cognitive decline that she's got, as well as the UTI, as well as energy production. So yeah, take it away, Doc Scott. Tell me.
It's a compound that's been around for over 100 years. It was synthesized back in the mid 1800s as a textile dye, interestingly enough. And they figured out that it treated malaria back in like the late 1800s, and then it became the first drug to register with RFDA in the United States in 1897. And it's a synthetic material. It doesn't come from a plant source at all. And that can be a problem for some people, but we also have to realize that plants can kill us too, ladies and gentlemen. It's about living in a synthetic world and sometimes needing synthetic things to help us. And the amazing things about methylene blue kind of go across the board. I think the main one to chat about would be it's called a redox cycler. And what that means is that it has the ability to help the mitochondria in our cells make more energy. And it also has the ability to help us become have more capacity to detoxify at the same time. It works like an antioxidant, and it kind of works like an adaptogen in some ways. Like, it really does what it's what's required depending on what's going on in the system. If the system needs more energy primarily, it's going to go and do that. If it needs more detoxification capacity, it's going to go ahead and do that. And part of it's also dose dependent. The higher the dose, the more that you're not only getting redox cycling, but you're also getting anti-infective capacity as well. And before the advent of antimicrobials in the 1950s, methylene blue was used for things like urinary tract infections very, very commonly. Mm. It was also used as a antifungal and antibacterial for other reasons. It's actually very fantastically effective against gram-negative bacteria specifically. That's those are commonly ones that cause urinary tract infections. And and so the major side effect of being on methylene blue is that it causes blue secretions, mostly blue urine. The higher the dose, the more other secretions will also turn blue, but you have to get pretty high doses before that starts happening. And there's a huge range of dosing where methylene blue can be very effective. It's going to be very, very low dose, somewhere around 4 or even 8 milligrams, up to 200 milligrams in a day, depending on the reason for taking it. The higher the dose you're taking, the more the acute issue typically, or like more severe infection you have, versus the lower the dose for more mitochondrial support. And the challenge with everybody, at least in the US population, I'm sure it's not that much different in New Zealand, about 96% of people are metabolically unhealthy, which means that they cannot produce energy well. They have inflammation in their system. They have mitochondrial dysfunction. And so methylene blue can be added in these cases to have significant impact on and support mitochondrial function, despite all these things that are damaging our mitochondria, and help recycle various things so you continue to make energy, to detoxify, et cetera. So it's got a huge swath of potential indications as a result of this, because it's really working on what I tell my patients: it's energy and resilience, energy and detox, if that's what we want to say, decreasing inflammation, fighting infection. And so it's been a really great road or journey. It's been our first products in this on the Troscriptions line that were released with methylene blue started in 2020, about a month before the pandemic. And so we've had people with infections, with inflammation, with anything, with a severe mitochondrial dysfunction, that have tried everything else, and all of a sudden methylene blue is making them feel better in days. And that's not across the board, but I mean, significant improvements. And And the patients like your mom with like mild cognitive impairment. We had a story very early on when we first launched the product of this lady, this girl who gave her grandmother methylene blue, who was in her mid 80s, and for the first time in the daughter or the granddaughter's life, this grandmother was telling her stories about the Mexican Revolution. They were Hispanic. And like things that she had never talked about before and never remembered. And so we've gotten tons of these stories over the years, and we're working with Alzheimer's practitioners now that are starting to use methylene blue as part of their regimens to help, you know, reverse or at least decrease the rapidity of progression of these kinds of things.
Yeah, and Dr. Francisco Gonzalez Lima is right at the cutting edge of this, and I'm hoping to interview him. I haven't reached out yet, but I'm intending to do that. And to share this, because, you know, so many people are going to be dealing with Alzheimer's, dementia. What about things like Parkinson's, ALS, multiple sclerosis, anything in that department as well that you're aware of?
Well, with Parkinson's, there's been some studies, because methylene blue also works as what's called a monoamine oxidase inhibitor, which just basically means it prevents the breakdown of certain neurotransmitters, including norepinephrine, dopamine, and serotonin. So there's been some interest in that capacity of methylene blue working in Parkinson's, because Parkinson's is a dopaminergic deficiency. But I think it goes way past that. Honestly, I think it's really a mitochondrial dysfunction in general, that's where methylene blue is really working, right? So there haven't been a lot of studies in MS, not in ALS either, although I'm certainly interested in working with those populations. We do have some MS patients that are taking it that I've heard that are doing very well. ALS is a huge issue, very difficult to treat. I've had almost zero success in hyperbaric chambers over the years. But I'm always hopeful, you know, in these cases that something can help. And the Troscriptions was really developed to help people right now while they're on that path to optimizing their health or healing or whatever. And like a lot of our products, the methylene blue products and others, are really focused on the energy side, and then we're focused on the calming, relaxing side, the GABA side too, the GABA neurotransmitter and some of the stuff too, because you know, most of us are GABA deficient. We're not getting enough of this neurotransmitter GABA that helps us relax our brain, calm the firing, and get into that parasympathetic mode. And so, you know, we have the on switch, which is methylene blue, oftentimes, and we have the off switch, which is your GABAergic supplementation that can really help calm things down, which is almost as important, if not as important, as the energy switch.
Yeah, and you're not taking GABA straight, because GABA itself doesn't get through the blood-brain barrier unless you've got a leaky brain and leaky gut.
Yeah.
So what are you using in your Trozy? Is it Trocalm?
Both of them.
Is your combination for your formulation for that? Yeah, I know you're using Cover, which is
It's called an allosteric modulator of the, mm-hmm. of the GABA receptor. So it's not GABA itself, but it binds to the GABA receptor at a separate site. And then it helps increase the amount of GABA that binds the neurotransmitter that's in the brain. That's how this works. And the way we develop things is that in Trocalm, for example, there's something that's going to bind to the GABA receptor itself. That's nicotinyl GABA, which is a vitamin B3 attached to a GABA molecule mm-hmm. mashed together. And so that's why it can get across the blood-brain barrier.
Wow.
So, and you have CAVA, and you have nicotinyl GABA, and you have CBD and CBG, which are non-psychoactive cannabinoids that also modulate the GABA system on these allosteric sites, or these other sites on the GABA receptor overall. And then our sleep formula has Hanokiol or Hanokyle from magnolia mm-hmm. bark, which is also working on one of those allosteric sites, and something called Agarin, which is actually binds to the GABA receptor itself, the GABA receptor site where GABA would bind. And it's a long acting GABA agonist, or increases GABA as a result of that. And, it binds this to the site for a long period of time, which opens up the receptor and makes it work. And this Agarin's from a mushroom called the Amanita muscaria mushroom, which is a psychedelic mushroom, but this particular compound is not psychedelic. It's just a GABA agonist. And many of us can't stay asleep because we don't have enough GABA around overall. And we're GABA deficient because of stress, because of hormonal issues, because of inflammation, because of infection, mineral deficiencies, you name it. So repleting GABA there's indirect routes to do it. You have to take the amino acids that can help you, glutamine and glutamate. Glutamate is an excitatory neurotransmitter that gets converted into GABA in the brain. Vitamin B6, magnesium are really important. But having supplementation that can help the system can be very, very impactful very quickly.
Just interrupting the show to let you know about my longevity and anti-aging supplement range. I'd love you to go and check it out. Go to my website, lisatarmaty.com, and hit the shop button, and you'll see a curated range of supplements, the latest in anti-aging, longevity, health optimization, performance optimization. I've gone out into the world, interviewed the most amazing doctors and scientists, as you'll know if you follow the show, and gone and got some of the best products that are out there. Stuff that I give to my family, that's what's in my range. So go and check it out at lisatarmaty.com.
Your whole health, because your ability to recover and get out of that sympathetic drive, which, you know, God knows I struggle with despite doing all these things. So Troscriptions, people can go to troscriptions.com and check all this out. I've reached out to your guys in the company and check down in the show notes or wherever for any links that there could be. I haven't worked it out yet, but it'll no doubt be there. How the hell
if anybody
we get
can figure it
you?
Out? It's you,
yeah.
Lisa.
So. Yeah. We need it down here, this stuff, you know, like, yeah. How do we get it down to New Zealand? What are the roadblocks to getting it? And, so the methylene blue, especially, or the canatine one that you have where it's got nicotine in it, and people go, well, nicotine. but again, it's really, really powerful in the right dose and the right delivery method, not smoking it or vaping
exactly.
it. How do we, are there many countries that are troubled to get into? Like, is there any way we can help forward that process? Which you probably need to take that in for conversation off here. But, you know, like I get frustrated. I can't get stuff down here. Like it's amazing stuff that would help people. And you just learn.
Yeah. It's hard because every country is a little bit different as far as what their regulations are, how they classify things. In many countries, methylene blue is purely a drug. And so you can't get it over the counter and you can't buy it and purchase it without a prescription. So that's like Canada, for example. I think New Zealand, there's some leeway with methylene blue, but I could be wrong there. But I mean, the goal for us is that eventually we're going to be making new products over the time that have less regulatory issue. Yep. We'll probably be making things without cannabinoids, for example.
Yep.
So that, because that can be an issue, even if it's CBD and CBG.
I know.
We have a new product called Tromune that just came out about a month ago. That's just one ingredient called cordycepin, which is the active potent ingredient in the cordyceps mushroom. And there's very few regulations around this one. So this one is easy to get to other places, we believe. Except if you have a place where cordyceps is being protected in some way, but it's fantastic. It's really been studied in multiple ways, but as an immunomodulator, as an anti-inflammatory, as an antimicrobial, as something that increases deep sleep, exercise performance. So we're very excited about that one. You take it at night, it gives you some immune system boost. It increases your deep sleep a little bit. So that one's probably one you can get over there.
Yeah. Okay, so we might be able to get one thing down here if you guys seem to, but we'll have a talk about all that later. But, you know, like, and you do it through a trochee. So this is something that you stick in your cheek and you let it sort of dissolve for 15 to 30 minutes and it goes. That way it's got a direct impact on the brain circulation and getting straight in rather than having to go through first pass through the liver and all of that.
Yeah, it's faster. So like a buccal trochee is going to dissolve faster. It's not going through your whole digestive system. So it's going to be quicker for people. Typically the onset of action is between 15 and 30 minutes. And a lot of things that go through your digestive system get inactivated in various ways.
Yeah.
And so the availability of that particular compound goes down. The exception to that rule actually is methylene blue, because methylene blue is highly bioavailable, whether you put it in your mouth or you swallow it. So if you don't want a blue mouth, because if you do dissolve our blue stuff in your mouth, it's going to turn blue.
Yeah, mom's got blue.
You can swallow it. Best to do on an empty stomach. But however, if you do have a lot of cognitive issues, like brain fog, concentration issues, it's often better if you dissolve it in the mouth because it's going to work faster that way. So you'll feel the impact more rapidly. But if you have exercise-induced fatigue, systemic inflammation, you don't necessarily need to use it as a trochee. You can swallow it in an empty stomach, which is what I often do. Like I take it pretty regularly and I don't use it in my mouth anymore for the most part.
Right. Yeah. Just because you've got a blue mouth afterwards, which opens up good conversations, but hey.
I don't mind, to be honest, but it's, yeah.
You look like a smurf.
Yeah, but I find it easier just to swallow, and I don't have a lot of cognitive issues. But if I did, I would certainly be thinking about, doing my mouth.
Yeah, well, I've just been with mum, did a bit of both, suck on this one and swallow this one, just see sort of, get hit both sort of things. So methylene blue, I've also been talking to a colleague here and they've done some clinical research on ADHD and combining it with L-theanine and caffeine in this case. What it does, people, and it works with red light therapy in behind this thing here. I've got a red light panels and stuff.
Nice.
It's bypassing the first two complexes or the first three complexes in the electron transport chain. So your bypass, which is mostly where the mitochondrial dysfunction happens, isn't it? So it's getting so that cytochrome oxidase, a bit like the red light therapy does. So it's another way to make energy without going through that whole electron transport chain, which can have issues and a lot of electron slippage and helping it that way. And that to me is like, well, how many people have got mitochondrial dysfunction? Their complex one or complex two are not functioning properly. We can get it through to cytochrome oxidase, the fourth complex in that electron transport chain, and make energy. That's pretty damn exciting. And they also use it in carbon dioxide, monoxide poisoning and cyanide poisoning, I believe. And it gets into the red blood cell, so that the heme, which attracts the oxygen, gets displaced by carbon monoxide. Along comes methylene blue and somehow helps it get back, get the oxygen back on.
You're on the right track. Yeah. You want to do my podcast for me now? Yeah.
I've listened to a lot of your lectures.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it. I mean, there's multiple different ways it's working, right? It can compensate for any damage to the electron transport chain. It can bypass any damage if needed as well. It can work on making sure that hemoglobin can bind red blood cells and bind the oxygen, on the red blood cells by changing the conformation of iron. iron, really. And these irons in a redox state always +2, +3, +3, you can't bind, +2, you can. And so you have to be able to do that, that recycling, so you can get more oxygen to bind. So,
Okay.
And oftentimes carbon monoxide poisoning is harder. That's more hyperbaric focused and just flooding the body with oxygen. But methemoglobinemia, which is when that iron's in the wrong state, that's what methylene blue can help with overall. So
it's helping that redox for the iron.
Yeah.
I didn't learn. That's new. I learned that one. It's new.
All good. Yeah.
Dr. Scott, I know you've got to go at the top of the hour. You've been absolutely wonderful. I could talk to you for absolute days. It's so fascinating. Thank you so much for the incredible work you put out into the world and all the things that you're doing to impact so many hundreds of thousands of lives. Really, really appreciate you. Is there anything we've missed or that you want to tell us? What are you working on right now, dare I ask?
Well, I mean, everything's around I've stopped taking more projects, that's for sure. I have the hyperbaric, we have a hyperbaric company called One Base Health that's doing great work around the world, helping people optimize their hyperbaric protocols, integrating other technologies together, creating an ecosystem of health and wellness, truly trying to shift that overall, which I'm excited about.
We're going to be talking to Dr. Jason Hahn on that, who's one of your
guys. Oh, good.
Good.
I'm glad you'll have him.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
And then, Jason's a great resource. And then we have the nonprofit Health Optimization Medicine and Practice. HomeHope.org is the website. And there you can go find training as a practitioner. You don't have to be a doctor. Just really interested in optimizing health and doing this with patients and clients in your practice. And it's a 7-module certification course. First module is called Metabolomics. And then we have the for-profit arm of that company, Transcriptions, which is developed to help support the nonprofit and help people right now on that long path. And you can find that at transcriptions.com. And always new products, always new services. And then, I have my clinical work and I also see people on a regular basis and consult on hyperbaric cases, work with clinics and help them get trained in how to integrate hyperbaric therapy with other technologies.
Yeah.
Hyperbaric therapy itself.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And, and then other stuff, but those are the main things.
So. And 4 kids and a wife and goodness knows how you do it all. I have no idea. Dr. Scott, thank you so much for your time today. You've been absolutely wonderful.
That's it this week for Pushing the Limits. Be sure to rate, review, and share with your friends. Head over and visit Lisa and her team at lisatamati.com.